All right, Acts chapter 25, we have some information about the death penalty. You may remember that Paul, he has appeared before two governors, Felix, Festus. He's going to appear before a king as well. And Paul, as the discussion continues, as far as his conversations with the officials, he's going to say, if I have done anything worthy of death, I'm willing to die. Well, that puts a death penalty on the table. So this is one of those times where I like to stop and give some extra attention to the subject that is introduced in the text. And crime, certainly, as we think about our culture, as we think about the world, it is a big part of life. When we think about crime, we have obviously the news. You can find a lot of crime there. Crime is featured in books, featured in TV shows, featured in movies, and all kinds of crime. Sometimes petty crime, sometimes small property crime. In fact, I think I may put out a little video on this, maybe Monday. But anybody seeing the news this morning? San Francisco, there was a fella who, at least as the current reporting says, was going around putting a note on cars which said, basically, I am a thief. I don't like to steal, so please give me some money. Here's my PayPal address. You can pay me by Bitcoin. Three or four different payment options because I want to stop stealing. I thought, well, there are a couple things there that I have as far as suggestions on how to deal with that. But I thought, wow, that is a new one, at least for me. The thief is saying, just give me some money so I don't have to steal from you. Unbelievable. When you look at our culture, you find that people have come up with various crime clocks. The FBI has a crime clock. You can find states that have crime clocks. They try to indicate how many crimes of this particular nature are being committed in this particular period. The Bible also has a lot to say about crime. In fact, you can even classify it. You might be able to make some greater distinctions, but I think basically you have two general distinctions when you read about crimes, or we might say sins in the Bible. You have religious crimes. There are crimes against God. Certainly if a person is not religiously inclined, they're not going to be thinking of those kinds of crimes, those kinds of wrongs, but God says there are some religious crimes. Idolatry, that is a big one. You find that heathens, pagans, they've often been involved with idolatrous practices. Sometimes God's people have been ensnared with idolatry as well. Why would you classify idolatry? And again, I think we can look at it as a sin, but we're going to use the word crime here primarily. Why classify idolatry as a sin or a crime, an offense against God?
One of the commandments, thou shalt not have any other God.
Okay, that would be a good beginning point. God said, don't do it. And if people are doing it, then obviously that's a violation of his law. What else? Why would idolatry be a crime, if you will? Well, maybe we need to back up a little bit. How would we define crime? What is a crime? All right, I think that has to be introduced as far as an initial definition. It is the breaking of a law. There is a standard, and the person violates the standard. In this case, the answer that Mom gave, you know, God says, do not do this as far as worship an idol. Anything else as far as crime?
It affects other people's rights.
Okay, sometimes that's not always going to be true, but it may interfere with the rights of someone else.
Sin.
All right, it's going to be wrong. It's not going to be good. Sometimes people say, well, we broke the law for a good purpose. And you might be able to make a case for that in certain instances. But generally, when we're talking about religious crimes, we're talking about things which are very, very bad. We remember from the book of Exodus, the Ten Commandments, Exodus chapter 20, verses 3 through 6, God said, this is something that you do not do. And you remember, let's take a quick look at Exodus chapter 22 and verse 20. We'll only probably look at about a half dozen references on today's sheet because there is a lot of material. Exodus chapter 22 and verse 20. Let's see what God said about idolatry. Anybody have it and want to read it? Maxine?
He who sacrifices to any god except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed.
Okay. God says if you're involved with idolatry, what's the penalty?
Destroy.
Destruction. You know, you're to lose your life. You're not to continue on this planet. When we think about crime, the thing that we naturally associate that what follows from crime. If there is crime, then we expect there's going to be some form of, or there should be some form of punishment. Those two things go together. Society gets that mixed up sometimes, but in the Bible, crime and punishment do go hand in hand. Now, if you are a person of the world, you're a person who is not religiously inclined, how bad does idolatry sound to you? I would say, yeah. I mean, big deal. You're worshiping this God. We're worshiping this God. Who cares? I mean, we're all good people. We all believe in trying to help our neighbors. We all believe in trying to be friendly and good and basically decent people. We just worship a different God. So God had a very, very different view of that. All right, then we've got something else. We've got in Deuteronomy chapter 13, verses 12 through 16. That's another reference that I want to run. And then we'll take a look at 2 Kings 21:6. And also, we'll skip Exodus 22, 18, but we'll look at Leviticus 20 and verse 27. So let's start. Let's focus on Deuteronomy chapter 13, verses 12 through 16 first. Our reader for there will be Brian.
Thou shalt hear any one of thee, in any one of your cities, say, which the Lord, thy God, has given you to dwell there, and say, say, certain men and children of Eliah are gone out from among you and withdrawn the inhabitants of the city, saying, let's go and serve other gods which you have not known. Then shall you inquire and make search and ask diligently. And behold, if it be true, then the thing certain that such abomination is brought among you, that thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, destroying it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof with the edge of the sword. And thou shalt gather the spoil of it into the midst of the street thereof, and shall burn it with fire, the city and all its spoil thereof every whit, for the Lord thy God, and it shall be a heap forever, it shall not be built again.
Okay, we live in a time where there are some places in America, throughout the world as well, where people kind of poo-poo crime. Well, you know, they did this, but, and then you have some kind of excuse. Here you have some people who are being involved, ensnared, they're involved with idolatry, and it's not just one or two. God says it's how large? What's the scale? How many people?
Entire city.
It's an entire city. Now, when you think about an entire city population-wise, at least for us, and I'm sure for the Hebrews that could have been much smaller sometimes, but for us, when you think about a city, population of what size comes to mind? Let's just throw out a couple numbers.
New York?
Well, I'm thinking actual numbers. How many people in the city?
30,000.
Yeah, I would think as far as the minimum, if we're having a city, we're probably going to have at least 30,000. So that's a fair number of folks. God says if that city, the 30,000 or 100,000 or 500,000 people, whatever that was, if the city has become involved with idolatry, then what needs to happen? Go in and... Yeah, everything. By the sword. Everything needs to lose its life. Raise it. Burn it. I mean, that's pretty serious stuff. In our country, we probably wouldn't see that done unless we had, you know, some kind of plague in an area. The government would say, okay, we've got to go in. Everybody's got to, you know, be killed off, and we have to quarantine that area, and nobody's going to come in. I mean, this was a big, big deal. So when God talks about religious crimes, he's not kidding.
Does this mean every living body in that city?
That's how I understand it, Don. I mean, it was to, I think, reinforce the point that, look, this is a serious matter. And we're not kidding. People need to learn from that example. And you can imagine that people, well, we haven't gotten there yet, but think about Sodom and Gomorrah. If you're in that area and you see the smoke going up, you think that's going to leave an impact on people? I mean, probably for a long time. Yeah, we remember the smoke. We smelled the smoke. I mean, look over there. There are the ruins.
Well, that means children too, right?
You have to take it all.
It's just difficult to explain to a non-Christian.
Yeah, it is, especially when you start looking at the various ites their lives were taken. But the answer to that, I think, is when you go back and you look at the history, jumping across the page a little bit, to the ites. They had hundreds of years to get things right. God was patient. He warned them and warned them and warned them, and they just went further and further and further into bad things. And you see that here, I think, as far as a reference as well. He talks about the city being engulfed. You might have a case where you have one or two or maybe a fourth of the population, but once it gets to the point where everybody in the city has become involved with this stuff, what's the chance of turning it back? Yes. Yeah. Really, you've crossed the line to the point where there is no hope of restoration. And there are times, just like with the flood, you got to go back and you're just going to have to clean the slate. And we sometimes have that. There are times where an organization has become corrupt, where the person moves in as far as a new CEO, and you know they call it cleaning house. All the employees are going to be let go. We're going to have completely new management. Or a restaurant, you find that it's failing. It's giving out bad service, and corporate comes in. Maybe it's a corporate-owned store, and they're going to say, you know, everybody's gone. We're going to, you know, just start from the ground up again. So this is a principle that we see in the world, and sometimes it was applied in the ways that you're describing.
So children back in that day, under this law, were collateral damage.
Nothing that they deserve.
I would be okay with that if you want to describe it in that way, yes. Because the adults, like I say, put themselves in a position where they destroyed themselves and their offspring. Trace?
But if when the children grew up, they would want to
adopt. Yes. Obviously, so if you're looking at this longer term from a spiritual standpoint, the children are saved in eternity. They did obviously live a far less number of years on the earth, but compared to what their fate would have been, eternally they are in a good relationship with God. Bonnie, and then Betty.
These children of these people are being brought up in a bad way.
So the worst possible way.
Yeah. These kids are just going to grow up to be like their parents.
Yeah, and this is capital punishment. And again, it's not one, it's not a team of, five or ten people. I mean, this is an entire city. We're likely talking about several thousand people. And God said, just go in there and, get rid of it all.
You kind of see that in America today, or beginning to see it. On the news, showed a little four-year-old boy disrespecting police. Cursing him out, kicking, hitting at him.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go forward to a couple of ages, 10, 11, and 12, where you see them speeding cars and running them down the roads, hitting,
yeah,
crashing into other cars, and then finally crashing and get out and run. So, it's in the children. If you go back to where Teresa says, the young ones that don't know better, they're saved anyway.
Yeah. People talk about things getting out of control. And when that statement is made, that can describe a wide range. That there's a lot of variation there. I mean, it can be just unruly. You can have a mob like we've seen. But then you can get to the point where, there is zero control at all. And once you get to that point, you have to restore order. And restoring order is generally not a pleasant experience. You're needing to be heavy-handed. You're having to exercise all your options, and you're having to do things which you would say, it would be like gangrene. If you have gangrene, is the doctor going to say, let's just give you some vitamins and see how it goes? What's he going to say? All right, we've got to cut off your leg. We've got to cut off your arm. Really? That's drastic stuff, doc. Well, yeah, but guess what? You have a drastic problem, so it has to be a serious solution for a serious problem. Okay, so we've got this stuff, and when we look at point number 5, it ties into it. Infant sacrifice. This was a big, big thing under the Old Testament system. Let's take a passage here, the reference I mentioned, 2 Kings chapter 21, verses 6 and 16, and then we'll tie two or three points together here, 5, 6, and then maybe even a little bit into 7. 2 Kings chapter 21, verses 6 and 16. Who has it and wants to read it for us? All right, Lois, to you. Thank you. Let's start with that first reference, verse 6, 2 Kings 21.
He made his son pass through the fire, practiced witchcraft, and used divination, and dealt with mediums and spiritists. He did much evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger. And then 16.
Mm-hmm.
Moreover, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood until he had filled Jerusalem from one end to another, besides his sin with which he made Judah sin, in doing evil in the sight of the Lord.
Okay, going back to that first reference, made his son to pass through the fire. Now, for us, that's kind of strange language, but what's that saying? His son passed through the fire. That just jumping across the flames, saying, look at me. What's that mean? His son passed through the fire. Do we know?
Run across coals?
No, it's not that.
Sacrifice.
It's infant sacrifice. You are sacrificing your child, your young child, your innocent child. Lois, are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Let's read that second reference once again. That's going to be back in verse 16. 2 Kings 21.
Moreover, Manasseh shed very much innocent blood.
Let's stop right there. He not only shed blood, he shed how much? He shed
innocent.
All right. That's the type. The amount is very much. He shed a lot of innocent blood. How did he do that? Well, again, you have young people being put to death. They were the sacrifices to the pagan gods. I mean, this is wickedness at a level which most of us will hopefully never see. I don't think any of us ever have seen anything like that. To do that once or twice would be awful. It would be horrific. But, I mean, he's doing that on a regular basis. And you find, and I don't quite understand the connection. I have not read that much as far as this area. I mean, I know just enough to satisfy my, I don't know that I have curiosity, but just, I guess, to satisfy my needs. But when you start looking at the occult, when you start looking at, you know, witchcraft and Satanism, those kinds of things, they do seem to have an interest in blood sacrifice, and they do seem to have an interest in innocent victims. And I'm not quite sure why sometimes that deals with children, but that may be because that's just the ultimate demonic sacrifice, the sacrifice of an innocent child. But this stuff, God says, look, these are crimes, if you will. These are religious crimes. They are serious crimes. And we're not going to look at it, but in Exodus chapter 22 and verse 18, point number 7, if you are involved with this kind of stuff, once again, the punishment needs to be death. You need to die. And that makes sense, because if you are promoting this kind of activity, this kind of great wickedness, chances are you're going to pass it on, you're going to try to be recruiting people, and you need to die. Mediums were stoned to death. Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 27, this was also a capital religious crime. Now, that's not by and large how a lot of people see mediums. Maybe we should pause here and ask, what's a medium?
Medium was one that speaks to the dead.
All right. We've had some people in the past, recent past, who claimed that they could speak to those who crossed over, get a message back from grandma, grandpa, you know, the great uncle, you know, maybe a husband, wife, maybe a child who had died prematurely. There's an interest in that. People want to communicate with the dead. But that is something that God says is offensive to him. That is something that God has told his people, Old Testament period, you need to leave that alone. That is in the realm of the occult. That is in the realm of the devil. And that is so offensive to me, God says it justifies the death penalty. Now, here's an interesting thing that you may not have ever picked up from the book of Isaiah. If you go back in the Old Testament and you start looking at the people, the characters who were involved in that kind of stuff, let's communicate with the dead, let's have the seances, let's go back and see what we can get as far as information from the other side. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 6 says the Philistines were involved in that kind of thing. Now, that's not generally what I associate with the Philistines. I'm thinking, you know, that they're kind of a warlike people and obviously on the other side of the fence compared to the nation of Israel. But Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 6 does associate that sin with this group of people. Moving down a little bit more, sticking with religious crimes, blasphemy. When we get to the New Testament, you can see it back in Leviticus chapter 24 and some other passages as well. But when we start dealing with the New Testament and Jesus is charged with blasphemy, how do the Jews feel? As far as what in their mind needs to be done to Jesus. You have blasphemed God, you have blasphemed the law, you have blasphemed the temple, and the blasphemers, what needs to be done to them? You need to die. You need to be stoned. And there were times in Jesus' life where they tried to stone him. And what about when we look at the book of Acts that we're going through, and we look at the life of Paul the preacher? Were there times where people wanted to stone him? The Jews wanted to take out Paul. By blasphemy. There were multiple occasions. You have, as you start looking at the Old Testament, some other things. Breaking the Sabbath. Remember the fellow, Numbers chapter 15, verses 32 through 36? He's out on the Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week. He's out gathering, what? Anybody remember? He's out gathering. That's very good, Sheena. He's out gathering sticks. So, question is, what do we do with him? Put him in a ward. Get an answer for that, and he was supposed to be put to death. This was a capital crime. It merited the death penalty. So you do have a lot of crimes that merited death under the Old Testament. Sometimes they were crimes which were committed against other people. For example, murder, Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6, God said, if you take the life of someone, you should forfeit your life, a life for life. Now, that's, again, not how a lot of people see things, especially with some of the younger folks today. Same-sex relationships, Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 13. God said that that is not only something that I prohibit. He said, you need to die for that. Now, how well does that message sit in our day and time? I mean, people mock it. People say, oh, yeah, you're the people who think that, you know, same-sex couples should be killed. Well, No, we don't believe that. We believe that the Old Testament taught that. We believe that we have a different law now. We recognize that our system of government is set up different than what the Hebrews had. Adultery, Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 10. God said if you're involved with adultery, the death penalty is on the table. What about in today's world? If you talked about adultery and death, people would think that you know, you're just nuts. I mean, you're some religious fanatic. They just can't see that. And then this one, Exodus chapter 21 and verse 15. What about hitting your parents? God said you assault mom and dad, and guess what?
Put to death.
Yeah, put to death. In our day and time, people couldn't conceive of that. I mean, well, that's normal for the 4 or 5 year old to, you know, hit mom and dad. And we're not talking about just, you know, playful push, you know, dad's, hey, dad, good to see you. I mean, we're talking about assault. But people do that. And as Betty said, it's not just with parents. I mean, we have small children sometimes assaulting the police and other people. So if that stuff is not clamped down on, it does get worse. All right. The major crime clocks, as we start looking at some of those, the FBI, the last one that I saw from them was 2019, but we do have a number of indications that crimes are up in a lot of different places. When you start looking at cities like Chicago, there are reports as far as some companies saying, we've had enough. We're moving. I read about one small business owner in Chicago the other day. He had a construction business. They worked for different utility companies. And he said, our people have been robbed. We've had equipment. I mean, like, you know, some of the big caterpillars and other equipment that you would find on large commercial jobs as far as construction, trying to, put in new power lines and those kinds of things. He said, we've just had enough. And we are moving out of Chicago. We have back in 2020, I'm not going to give you a lot of statistics, but more than 7.5 million people were arrested for various crimes. Now that's 1 year. That's a lot of people. You're pushing almost 8 million people in the nation arrested. And that doesn't, you know, get everybody, obviously. And maybe some of those people were innocent. We would suspect that there were at least some of them, but it is just amazing. People sometimes will look up the safest cities and they will, look up the least safe cities. I'm going to put you on the spot, Charles. I hate to do this to people, but this just is an ideal question for you. Truck drivers, do they kind of pay attention to safe and unsafe cities? Okay, is just, you know, kind of, you just figured out it in your own CBs, so are they?
Combination of word of mouth through different CBs and communication apps, but it's also, I mean, we do look at the statistics and everything. I mean, Chicago, South Chicago is real bad and everything. Going out to San Francisco and everything, they're getting broken into and literally in traffic stops, open up the back doors and
on Amazon. Yeah. So, for people who are on the road, for whatever reason, truck driver or something else, I would think that would be really important. It's all right. We're going here, so we need to take some extra precautions or try not to stay overnight. So, it's really, really sad. The question then becomes, and this is point number 17, how have we gotten here? We have people old enough in this country and throughout the world to look back some years, some decades, and think it wasn't always like this. Truck drivers, I think that they probably, if they've been doing the job for a while, they can look back and say things have definitely changed. So the question needs to be asked, why are we in this position? As a general answer, I would say that we have a lot of problems in the area of holding people accountable. If people are not held accountable, just like kids, if they feel like there's no accountability, we did it once, and if that was okay, then what can we do the second time? Rinse and repeat. We'll go back and do the same thing. We've got a lot of breakdown homes, and the world hates to hear about that. The world has kind of offered us its definition for a home, but what do we see when we think about parental breakdown in homes? Do we have it?
Definitely.
And how do we see it? Yeah, it can be difficult enough for a man and a woman, you know, to make a marriage work, keep a home together. But when you take half of that adult resource away, you know, what was difficult at times can now seem impossible. And then, you know, you've got the single parent trying to provide income to get the resources there and oversight of the children. Oftentimes that is definitely not in the top three or four priorities. Bonnie?
I think a lot of it is materialism. People are so wrapped up in want. And back when I was a kid, not too many women lived outside the home. My mom did, but she's a nurse, but most of my friends' moms didn't work outside the home. But then when they, you know, I used to talk about there was one car garages, then the two car garages came because they had to have two cars because mom went to work, on and on and on it went. And I think a lot of it was materialism, and a lot of problems with materialism today.
Yeah. Wanting. That's kind of a point C that we've got there as far as when you, the way that we described it down there, more are concerned about pursuing the American dream rather than trying to go ahead and instill things like good values in the kids. We have an area where people sometimes fish where we live. The other day we had three kids show up, and I happened to just be in that vicinity and asked them, I said, hey, you know, are you tied in with somebody in the subdivision? Oh, yeah. And I said, well, we always check because we, you know, are concerned about liability and have some other issues. And I said, who do you know? The people right there in that house. I said, oh, well, they're some of our closest neighbors as far as proximity and conversations. And knowing what I know about the neighbors, I would just almost guarantee my life and your life that what they were telling me was a lie. So I said, all right, now let me understand. The house right there, I'm just going to point to Tim because that's about how close it was, it seems like. Yeah. And I said, no, one more time. Are you telling me it is right there? That one? Oh, yeah. All right. I said, well, let's go over and see him. So we start walking over there a little bit, and we get a little further, and he's not home. I said, oh, yeah, he is. I saw him out just a little bit ago. They haven't left. A few more steps. We don't know him. I said, no, wait a minute. I said, you told me the house right there. No, we didn't. No, we didn't. And I thought, you know, it would have been so easy to say, hey, look, you know, we don't know anybody in here, you know, and that wouldn't have been a big deal. But they didn't do that. They decided to lie, and then they decided to go down to the mat on that lie. And there was no parent around. You know, parents had just kind of let them run free. They had bikes, so they must have been close enough to get in there. So a lot of accountability issues, failing to install proper values in kids, absentee parents, broken homes, latchkey kids. All of those things contribute to a lack of direction. The respect for authority, that's gotten really bad. I mean, Jan, you can talk to her as far as somebody who's in the public school system. And if you have, I mean, Gary, I'm sure that you see it as well as far as, you know, dealing with some kids. That's a problem. I mean, if people are given information from someone who has authority, they really need to obey. But authority is challenged in the home. It is challenged when it comes to law enforcement. You know, I don't quite understand the thinking, but in today's world, you know, people think that if the police show up, you run from them. That to me just never seems to be like to be a good idea. I mean, you stop, and if they have questions, then you deal with the questions. If they arrest you, then you let them arrest you, and you get that sorted out at a later time. But we've got authority challenge in athletics and the church. It's just really everywhere. We also see some issues as far as the severity of punishment being drastically reduced. Justice system, I mean, that's just, you see cops leaving in a lot of different places. But here, in the midst of all this, you've also got a religious aspect to it. You would think that society, at least in our country, would hopefully get some guidance from religious groups. I mean, we've got various denominations, and you would hope that when it comes to things like basically capital punishment, law and order, what does the Bible say as far as, you know, law-breaking, you would hope that all the religious groups would give the same message. I mean, right, if we're all pulling from the same book, right? But when you look at subjects like capital punishment, where do you think the different religious groups are? Are they united or not? They are not. You will hear from some high-profile people, for example, the Pope. I don't believe that he is the Pope as far as the Bible doesn't use that designation. But the people who refer to him, they have a stance on capital punishment, which I would argue is different from the Bible. So if you have this religious group who says it's wrong, this religious group who says it's right, this religious group who says, well, you know, kind of this, kind of that. And all of these religious guides are trying to influence society, and you throw that in with all the stuff that's taking place in society that we just mentioned, what happens?
Chaos.
It's chaos. And that sounds a lot like what we've got right now. So the denominations have also created, at least to some degree, some of the problems. Now, with all that, somebody can say, all right, well, let's look at the Bible and actually see if there are some arguments for it or if there are some arguments against it. Well, we'll start with the four arguments. You don't have to read very far in the Bible. In fact, you just have to get to the second chapter of the first book, Genesis, to read about capital punishment. Don't know if you've ever thought about it or not, but would you say that Adam and Eve, the first couple, they faced capital punishment?
Yeah.
All right, somebody says yes. Why would you say yes? God says, in the day that you eat thereof, you shall surely die. Well, what's capital punishment?
Yeah.
It's death. Now, you can say, well, they didn't immediately die in the sense that they continued to live for a while. Well, that's true. But they lost not only their physical lives, they did eventually die physically, and they certainly lost that spiritual fellowship with God. So you do not get very far in the Bible before you start reading about the fact that God says violations of the law can be especially serious. Then you only go about four chapters later, you get into Genesis chapter 6, Genesis chapter 7 that we talked about earlier a little bit with Don, and you've got the wickedness on the earth reaching what kind of level? It is to the point where the thought of man was evil continually. And God says, what are we going to do? We're going to kill them all. We're going to wipe everybody out except a few people on the boat. And again, that was the death penalty. Then you just have to read about 10 chapters more. And you read about an area, Sodom, Gomorrah, the surrounding cities. Again, God had given them time, but these people had, they were kind of like the individuals as far as Manasseh that we read about from the book of Kings. I mean, when you are going to somebody's house and you are not just knocking on the door, you are beating on the door, doing your best to force your way to enter this guy's house. How committed are you to your act? I mean, what else can you do except maybe burn the place down and try to force them out? So these people, they were entrenched in this particular sin, same-sex relationships, and God said, what's going to happen? Here comes the... All right, here comes the judgment. Fire, brimstone, rain down from heaven. It was capital punishment. Exodus chapter 21, verses 23 through 25. Let's take a look at that. We'll also get somebody lined up for Romans chapter 1 and verse 32. Exodus 21, 23 through 25. Who'd like to be a reader there? Gary? And then let's also get a reader for Romans chapter 1 and verse 32. Romans 1, 32, that'll be your mom. Gary, when you're ready, Exodus 21, verses 23 through 25, please.
But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, strike for strike.
All right, here is kind of the tit-for-tat justice. God says, if somebody does this to you, then what do they deserve?
Same.
The same thing. All right, if someone took a life, then God said, your life needs to be forfeited, you need to die. And again, that's the same principle that we see in Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. Mom, to you, Romans chapter 1 and verse 32.
Who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them.
All right. I'm not going to go too far with this because it'll tie in a little bit as far as a morning lesson, but you have a lot of religious people who say we love God, we believe the Bible, we follow the Bible, and yet if they were to actually read some of what Scripture says, they'd really struggle to explain some of the verses, and here's one of them. Paul says there are people who do some things which are what? They are worthy of death. Well, guess what? If you do some things and you are worthy of death, that's another way of saying what's right. Capital punishment. There are times, there are cases, there are crimes, if you will, that merit that. Let's go back to the book of Genesis. There's a passage in there, Genesis chapter 4, 23 and 24. It's a little difficult, but I think in light of the discussion today, it's worthwhile to talk about for just a little bit and to see the point that's being made because it's very, very applicable. Genesis chapter 4, verses 23 and 24. Brian's got it.
Elimelech said unto his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech, hearken unto my speech, for I slay a man to my wounding and a young man to my hurt. The king shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold.
All right, so here we have a reference to Cain. What's the story about Cain? Anybody remember? All right, he was a murderer. Who did he kill?
His brother.
His brother who was? Abel. All right, so now here in Genesis chapter 4, not long after that, you have what seems to be an account of self-defense. And you can imagine that people, maybe that was the first instance of self-defense. You know, what's going on here? Is that okay? And what's the point? If Cain was able to, kill somebody, cold-blooded murder, I'm just angry, I killed him. And he wasn't killed, was he?
No,
he continues to live. God had a conversation with him, and Cain was concerned that people were going to kill him, but apparently no indication that we have as far as a premature death, so we would assume that he continued to live. But the argument here is, if Cain was able to commit cold-blooded murder, and I've killed a guy in self-defense, then what must be true in my case?
No death.
Yeah, no death. I'm certainly going to be okay. So it's kind of an interesting argument, but that goes back to what we were saying earlier, that once you, we hear the old expression, we have a lot of them, what's opening up a can of worms mean?
Starting a new issue.
Well, okay. Yes. If we allow this, then chances are, and there is a slippery slope fallacy, just because this happens, that doesn't mean this and this and this will happen. But if we do this, if we permit this, if we don't take care of this, or if we don't stop this, then we expect that there are going to be more problems down the road. Now let's take a look at something else. And this teaching is rarely used in conjunction with capital punishment. But I'm going to cite it in part because Jesus is the one who gave it. Luke chapter 20, verses 9 through 16. And then after we get through that, we will look at some of the arguments against capital punishment and or the death penalty and try to respond to them. Luke chapter 20, verses 9 through 16. Who's there and wants to read it for us? Gary, to you.
And he began to tell the people this parable. A man planted a vineyard and let it out to tenants and went into another country for a long while. When the time came, he sent a servant to the tenants so that they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. But the tenants beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent another servant, but they also beat and treated him shamefully and sent him away empty-handed. And he sent yet a third. This one also they wounded and cast out. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him." But when the tenants saw him, they said to themselves, "This is the heir. Let us kill him so that the inheritance may be ours." And they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. And what then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? How far am I reading?
You're 16, I think.
Okay. He will come and destroy those tenants and give the vineyard to others. When they heard this, they said, "Surely not."
All right. He's going to come and do what? He's going to
destroy them.
What do you think that means?
They're going to die.
They're going to die. They killed the heir. They were going to die as a result. Now, that is a teaching by Christ, an approved teaching, if you will, and it is another argument for the death penalty. But somebody says, "Now, wait a minute. There are some arguments against the death penalty." They would say, "Well, Israel. Let's look at the nation of Israel." He cited all those Old Testament passages, and there was, death for, idolatry, and there was death for assaulting parents. But, Israel had a special relationship with God. God was the king of the nation. America is not set up that way. The other nations of the earth, they are not set up that way. So, it was okay because of how Israel was tied to God, but not okay because nations today are different. How would you answer that argument? Nobody? How would you answer that argument? Someone says we have a different system of government today, therefore capital punishment doesn't apply. Well, I think the quick answer is, it is true that Israel had a different system of government. But when we look at those Old Testament passages, even if you want to say they have no relevance today, what do we just see from what Jesus said? What do we see in Romans chapter 1 and verse 32? Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, Paul said the government bears a sword in vain. So you can be dismissive of Israel, you can throw out the Old Testament, but there's still plenty of information. Paul's statement in Acts chapter 25 that, Lord willing, we'll get to next week. All right, this is the oldie, and for some people it's the goodie, but it is not so good as far as effectiveness. Thou shalt not kill, part of the Ten Commandments. So we can't kill anybody, no matter how bad they've been. How would you answer that argument?
That's a change in the word of training over time, right?
All right. When God said, thou shalt not kill, kill there, if you look at it, means not kill per se, but it means thou shalt not murder. And you see that being reflected in places like Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. Don't murder people. God hates the innocent blood. So if you're going to use that, we're certainly willing to talk about that passage, and we want to make sure that it's used in the right way. Someone says, if you believe in the death penalty, you do not respect life. How do you answer that? All right, yeah. You know, we're talking about respect. Great, we're all for that. But you have created a problem, and that problem needs to be addressed. And the remedy is you forfeit your life. All right, tied in with that is D, we should just forgive people and be merciful versus judge them and kill them.
God holds people accountable, and yeah. We are to follow in his footsteps.
Yeah. If mercy negates justice, then ultimately what's going to be true? If mercy cancels out justice, what will ultimately be true?
Everyone will get into heaven.
Yeah. Why?
Because there'll be no justice for those who were unrighteous.
Yeah. So people sometimes, they can't see that mercy and justice go together. I mean, we can be merciful to the condemned, can we not? Do we have to string him out in the desert and let him die by fire ants with honey drizzled all over him? You know, we could do that for a condemned person, but no, there are humane ways to remove someone or even an animal from this earth. All right, people would argue sometimes the death penalty is taking revenge and thus wrong. How would we deal with that? You want revenge on people.
You're not taking revenge. You're just having him meet his judgment.
All right. There is a system of justice, and we're not looking at it. Some people might want revenge, but we're looking for justice. He or she or they have engaged in an act which merits a death penalty. And then there would be some people who come back to this one. It doesn't work. Well, it does. I think it's Ecclesiastes chapter 8 and verse 11. It says that needs to be executed speedily, otherwise it's not so effective. But let's say that argument is true. Someone says it doesn't work. Even if that were true, which I do not hold to, I don't think the evidence supports that allegation, but even if that were not true, what would still be right? It may not deter people, but still it is the
law of God.
It is the law of God. It is the right thing to do. And how can that be practiced fairly? Certainly want to be assured of the person's guilt. It needs to be proportional. If someone gets a speeding ticket, no one, I think, has any idea about them needing to be executed for that. The same standard for all, whether you are rich, poor, whether you are connected or not. And then you have some information down there in Deuteronomy chapter 25 that you can check out in your own time.